So thank you so much. Again, I'm Stephanie Cadle Terrace. I'm sitting with Kim Baer. Is that how you say it?
Yep.
And it is October 14th, 2009. Thank you so much for stopping for a minute to chat with me, Kim.
Sure.
So how long have you been shopping at the Farmer's Market?
Wow, that's a hard question because I think when I first moved to Ann Arbor, which was probably more than 25 years ago, I didn't really know about the market so much when I was a student here.
Uh-huh.
And so I probably didn't come that often, but in the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, I have come to the market probably at least once a week, and these days I come probably on both days a week.
Oh, good. What has changed that has led you to come so frequently?
I think starting to think differently about how we eat.
Mm-hmm.
And wanting to do a little bit more to support the farms in our area, and also I think it's just a beautiful place to come. It's really just a highlight of the week to get to come here and see all the amazing things that are growing in Michigan and see what's in season and kind of watch the seasons change.
Mm-hmm.
over the course of the year. And I also come in the wintertime, and that's one thing that I really enjoy, that the market stays open all winter long.
It is amazing, isn't
and
it?
So I'm always really impressed when I get here and there are like 5 other customers and there are 5 farmers standing here in the cold.
It's true.
And so it's just, I don't know.
I like coming in the winter too, and there's plenty of parking and they seem so happy to see you.
Right, and that's just a really warm feeling.
What would you typically buy in the wintertime?
Well, in the wintertime, the selection is fairly limited, as you probably know. But I'm always very excited to see the greens.
Mm-hmm.
So the recently, or over the last few years, the Hoop House Farmers with the greens, I think, is a really amazing development that just tastes so good in the wintertime. Cider and apples are here for most of the time. Sometimes honey. Usually Farmer John with his eggs, so
yep.
I always get some of those. There might be somebody here with meat,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I might get that, but we have a meat CSA this year, so I don't know. But I'm really hoping that there might be more people with greens this year,
mm-hmm.
more people with anything that's like a vegetable.
Yes, that's a good thing, isn't it?
That would be fantastic.
I know, because even the ones that have been regular, they usually sell out really early in the day, too, so there's clearly a demand for it.
If you're a winter shopper, you know who to get here early.
That's right.
But I understand, I think Shannon is going to be having a green CSA this year.
Oh, really? In the wintertime?
Yeah.
Oh, great. No, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, so I think that kind of demand is really kind of spurring some more farmers to grow stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like Shannon has 2 greenhouses now. I think Farmer John from
is
our
he
family
be growing
farm.
Greens?
I think he's going to be growing greens this year, and I think one other person might be here too. So I'll be very interested to see who the winter farmers are this year.
Yes, definitely. Well, and they said that shopping really picked up in winter the last couple years, so that's an incentive for them too to have more available for increased customers. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Did you participate in a CSA during the summer, or do you just shop for what you want?
We do both, actually.
Uh-huh.
So we're members of the Tantry Farm CSA, and we have been for the last maybe 5 years or more. But we split it with another family. It's
mm-hmm.
kind of too much for us to eat, and it's also, even though it's fantastic, wonderful food that I would not be able to get at any price at any store, I really enjoy coming to the market, and so usually buy some more things in addition
uh-huh.
to what's in our CSA box.
Yes, I grew a garden this year, but I still came every week and bought things that weren't in my garden.
Well,
so
we have a little garden too. But it's just, I don't know, it's just never, it seems like never enough. And I don't know, you just can get different special things.
Yes.
Pantry right. grows really a lot of amazing things, but there are just too many great vendors here, I think.
To resist.
So, yeah.
How many people are in your household, Kim?
Right now there are 2 of us. There used to be 3 of us,
uh-huh.
but my daughter's graduated from college now, and so she's off in Shanghai, so we don't get to have that many meals with her these days.
No, I guess not.
Yeah.
Now, has your own cooking habits changed in recent years as you've become more local in your buying?
Well, I would say that we eat at home a lot more than we used to,
mm-hmm.
actually. And that food doesn't taste as good in restaurants anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're a lot more careful about where we go out to eat at restaurants now. And that it's been a really good thing for us, because now going out to a restaurant is really kind of a special big deal kind of thing, which I think it should be. It should be something special if you're going to spend that much money on it.
Yes.
And I think that we also enjoy cooking at home a lot more. I'm making a lot more stuff than I used to, like trying to figure out how to make things that I don't have to use packages for.
Right.
Like, I make yogurt now.
Oh, good for you.
And I make granola. And I made sauerkraut. And I make jam. And I think my next thing is to try to figure out, I love crackers. And crackers have a lot of packaging.
Crackers are easy to make.
Yeah.
I started making them this summer. Yes, and I told my husband, I said, it's faster to make the crackers than to go to the store and buy them.
Well, is that really true?
Yeah, 20 minutes. I'm telling you, it's really quick.
Wow, I need your cracker recipe then. What kind of crackers do you make?
It's from the Bittman book, the Mark Bittman book, How to Cook Everything.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, if you have a good pastry board or something, you know, that you can roll things out and they won't stick. It was just as quick as could be, because it's just flour and water and I don't know. That was about it.
Yeah. Well, what have you heard about what people are cooking or doing differently?
You mean since I've been talking to people at the market? Well, not everybody, very few people I've talked to have come at it from the direction that you are, you know, because I'm getting all kinds of shoppers, you know, people that just come every once in a while for the aesthetic fun of it or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But it's inspiring to talk to someone who is definitely on the same path that I am, because you're saying all the things that I keep thinking, and it's, you know, this is the work that we all have to do. But finding the time, I think, we really have to own up to, it changes how you structure your days and your life in order to make that a priority.
Well, I think that you're really right, that it's all about priorities. And I was a project manager for a long time. And if you've been a project manager, you know that there are three things. It can be good, fast, or cheap. And you can pick two of those.
That's right, exactly.
But you can't have all three.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want it to be good, it can't be fast necessarily.
That's right.
But it doesn't really have to cost that much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that really gets me, is when people talk about this as an elitist thing.
The farmer's market?
Well, having this sense that food should be an important part of your day,
mm-hmm.
or that thinking about your food is something only people with a lot of money can afford. I don't think that that's the case, because when you make food yourself, it's as inexpensive as it's going to get.
That's right.
And I did this
little... When you buy it direct from farmers, that's as cheap as you're going to get compared to shopping at a store that had to mark it up for the store's profit.
And plus you get the benefit of there being farms in your area. And so I guess actually a lot of the reason that it's become important to me to do this is thinking more and more about... our community's food security.
Yes.
And the idea that if we didn't have a lot of trucks to take vegetables 3,000 miles, would our region be able to grow enough food for itself?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's going to come a day when we're going to need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it might even happen in my lifetime.
But you have started doing your part to support these local farmers.
Yeah. The whole community food security, I think, is something that people aren't thinking enough about,
mm-hmm.
and that we will start to be thinking about a lot more. And a lot of it is developing the skills and deciding to take the time, because
mm-hmm.
this is all stuff that your grandmother did and my grandmother
exactly.
did.
Exactly. It's not that many generations removed from when this was the way life worked, right?
Yeah.
And we just seem to get off the path there for about 40 years, so let's just get back on the path.
Well, so why have you started doing it?
Well, I read a few books
uh-huh.
that really made the difference, the Animal Vegetable Miracle you know, the pollen books, and I'd been interviewing older women who had, you know, lived more subsistence lives as children and remembered how their mother had to put away food in order to have food to feed the family, and that was maybe about 6 or 7 years ago when I first started doing that, and I was like, this is really eye-opening to me, you know, being just a grocery store shopper myself and someone who had gone out to eat a lot before. And then I bought a house where I had a yard where I could start growing my own food. And then I read these books. And so the whole thing just kind of came together, and I'm like, this is the way it has to be. This is the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
How did you find your change to, your life change to this?
Probably pretty similarly. although I've been involved in the Slow Food group for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And so I had been thinking about that, but I guess also starting to think about, like, what are some of the assumptions that we make about our food? One, that you have to buy it at a grocery store, which is not true.
Right.
One, that you can't know where it comes from, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Another, that you have to buy things like yogurt or granola, because how could you possibly make those yourself, which is not true.
Or pancake mix.
But I think reading books like that is really inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And it does help shape your thinking, or at least give you a different perspective to think that, oh my God, I could learn where my food comes from.
That's right.
I could grow some of it. I could know some of the people that grow it. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I don't know, I think it's probably a big combination of things. And like you said, it's really the only thing that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been surprising, I guess, to me, ways that it's had an impact in ways I didn't expect, or
like
made
what?
Things happen that I didn't expect. Like getting to know people I would have never gotten to know otherwise.
You mean here at the market?
Here or? At the market and in other places in my life. So I write a food blog.
Oh, good.
And so that's been a part of it too, is getting to meet people I would have never otherwise met. And having like get-togethers or doing things that I would never have expected to do. So one of the things that I did this year was help organize the Homegrown Festival.
You did. Thank you for that.
So that was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the second year that we did it, and we estimate that over 5,000 people came this year.
Fantastic.
It was so amazing to see the market with so many people here who care about food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that probably would never have happened without moving in this
right.
direction.
Right. Good for you for that. Can you talk any more about the Homegrown Festival as the experience it was?
Well, I guess for me, the experience that it was is a lot longer lasting than for most people, because we were in the process of planning it for most of the last year.
Uh-huh, right.
And so that part is ultimately a fulfilling story, but also a story filled with frustration and anxiety, because you're trying to work with a group of people to make an event happen, that everyone's a volunteer, and you're just trying to fly by the seat of your pants to figure out what you can do and what's realistic to
right.
you and what really will happen.
I overheard some conversation about controversy over the poster at one point, so there's all kinds of little things,
yes,
right?
And I was deeply involved in that that controversy. So that, you know, that part is difficult, but on the day that it happened, and we had just finished setting up the market, and there were all these tables, and the farmers, and the chefs, and the nonprofits, and the other few vendors that we had gotten here, and people were starting to arrive, and the sun was going down, and it was this beautiful, golden September afternoon, and the market looked to me like it should look for an event like that. Because it's this beautiful space where people can run into each other, where people can get amazing things to eat, where you can taste 50 different tomatoes. And then slowly over the course of the evening, the market started to grow the way that it does on a busy Saturday. And it was so crowded that you could barely walk. And so seeing that and having it be this beautiful September evening, and having a whole bunch of my friends here, and having worked really hard to make all of this happen, I just had that feeling like when your jaw hits the ground, like you can't believe it,
mm-hmm.
kind of feeling.
Wonderful.
Like, oh my God, this actually worked.
And all these people are buying into this message that we need to be spreading far and wide.
Yeah. and having a fantastic time. People mm-hmm. coming out with their families and playing the pie hole game and seeing how wool is spun into yarn and the tomato tasting. I just love that. And having 10 different chefs here making stuff that they're really proud of and then they work together with farmers to make. And just putting together this incredible menu. And I think that people really need to see that it's possible mm-hmm. and to see what's possible. And I think people, I guess part of what I hope happens is that when you, is the sense that when you love a place, you want to protect it. You yes. want to make it the best that it can be. And I think that there's something that is so worthy of our love and protection in this part of Michigan. And I think that there are reasons for that people can connect to. And a lot of those reasons are here at the farmers market.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that perspective. One nice thing I found about it too is that it seems like, unlike a lot of other sort of shoulds, you know, things you read and you're like, I really should do better with my energy conservation or driving or whatever, that somehow this one is like just all about fun. I mean, it's an opportunity as opposed to, you know, an obligation or an onerous change of, you know, I mean, it's just about having better food. I mean, what could be better than that?
It's an opportunity to bring beauty.
Yes.
And joy and meaning into your life in
yes.
a way that is just so direct.
Yes, absolutely. And daily.
And yeah. And that part just really excites me.
That's great.
A lot.
What do you do for a living, Kim?
I work as a freelance writer and a culinary researcher.
Well, culinary researcher? What does that mean? Is that part of your blog?
I do some of that for my blog, but it's basically, so I have a degree in information library science,
uh-huh.
and so some of the work that I do is helping people who are writing books about culinary topics find out more about things that need to go in their book.
Are you doing that on a freelance basis? Or
uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, it's really, really fun work, and so part of it is having access to the Mongoni Culinary Archive at the Clements Library.
I was just going to say, it must have something yep. to do with those cookbooks.
Yep. And so finding out about what things were like before we had baking soda and baking powder,
uh-huh.
What cooking was like before we had stoves, and what the development of stoves did to our cooking.
That would be interesting.
Finding out about some of the weird food products, like you probably didn't know that there used to be a cereal called Try a Bite of, that was a combination of celery from Kalamazoo, which was Celery City,
uh-huh.
and cereal from Battle Creek, which was Cereal City.
Uh-huh.
So some guy
celery
had
cereal?
The harebrained idea to create this celery-flavored cereal called Try a Bite of.
I have to say, I would want to try it.
Well, apparently a lot of people also did not want to try it, because the company lasted about a year.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't find that out unless you were digging for that kind of information.
Yeah. But it's a kind of a cool, funny thing. Or, you know, the history of Verner's, which was created in Detroit. And this pharmacist
invented.
Wasn't
it an accident?
Well,
or is that apocryphal?
There was a part of it that was apparently accidental. So he had created this ginger soda with vanilla and herbs and spices. And then he was called away to the Civil War. And so he put his, you know, this thing that he was making in an oak cask or some kind of wooden cask, and he put it in a safe place until he came back from the war. And when he came back from the war, the flavor had changed into some, like, amazing, refreshing drink that he couldn't believe how fantastic it was. And apparently a lot of other people thought so, too. And he started manufacturing it. And for a long time, you could only get it at his store in Detroit on Woodward Ave.
Hmm.
And then for a long time, you could only get it in this area of
mm-hmm.
Michigan. And
mm-hmm.
eventually he sold it, and you know, the rest is history.
Right.
So it was a secret recipe for a while. And it kind of wouldn't have happened if the Civil War hadn't occurred.
Did he have to leave it in oak barrels for years in order to make more? I wonder how he figured out how to replicate it.
That part of the story I don't completely know. But there are some really cool old advertisements and crazy people who, you know, collect that kind of stuff and the stories and things like that.
I can't help noticing your button. So is that a farmer equals the Statue of Liberty?
Yes.
Where did that come from?
It came from Slow Food Nation.
Oh, okay.
Which was a huge slow food international event and conference in San Francisco last year.
Mm. Did you go?
Uh-huh.
Cool.
Yeah, I did. So I was the representative for our chapter of Slow Food.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And actually, we had the first Tenderloin Festival after Slow Food Nation. And it really seemed to me like sort of a miniature version of Slow Food Nation.
Wonderful. Good for you for bringing that to us.
Yeah.
Is there anything about this farmer's market that you think sets it apart or is a particular strength?
I love how there are more and more organic farmers in this area. I love that it's a market where everything is made by or grown by the people who are selling it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really, really important. I love that it goes all winter.
Mm-hmm.
That really sets it apart. I think there's only one other market in this area that goes all winter.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. I think the Royal Oak Market is one of the only ones. I love that it's in this part of town.
Mm-hmm.
I think I love having it be close to the co-op.
Yeah, you can pretty much do all your shopping between those two locations.
Well, I guess that's one thing that's really changed for me, that I don't go to the grocery store anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is my grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the couple of stores in between.
That's
the
right.
Co-op, sometimes Squirrel Market, and
it's everything
I'm done.
One can need. Except toilet paper. Well, we'll probably get that at the co-op, too.
You can even get that at the co-op. I believe you can.
Well, that was most of the things I wanted to ask you, Kim.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to share?
I'm glad that you're doing this project. I think it's really neat, all of the new things that are happening at the farmer's market. And I hope that I can find that heirloom apple display.
I hope so, too.
So thanks.
Thank you very much.